Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Mr. President, you're driving us crazy.
With all this mess, the radio is the only thing that's really working good.
Stop spending!
Spending!
Stop spending!
Welcome to the dawn of a new, unified Republican government.
They can run the okey-doke on you, bamboozle you.
We are not enemies, but friends.
So we finally have this God that's gonna come down and help us all.
Now, Mark Reardon.
You just referred to Trump as a God.
Yeah.
On KMOX.
It's go time. It's go time time. It's go, no go, lock and load, love him and leave him, smoke him if you got him, see him when I see it, because it's time for Mark Reardon time.
Back up, you creep. Get away from me.
Well, hopefully it's not here we go again. We have a shooting in Parkland, Florida at a high school, Broward County, Florida. Watching some video right now of kids just running across an open field to safety. We don't know at this point a whole lot about this shooting. We don't know whether or not there's anybody dead or what the circumstances are. We're going to certainly track that. We have some updates from CBS coming, and then we do have a live stream from WFOR in Miami as well that we might dip into here this afternoon as we move along on the show. Lots to get to. Let me start with this, though. How about Shaun White last night? You know, I got to tell you something. I'm trying to get wrapped up into the Olympics and excited, and that was a lot of fun. And you've gone from this, I think, this perception, and I remember watching the X Games years ago and seeing these guys and Shaun White with the long hair, and he was an interesting character. I never really paid much attention to all that stuff. I guess I'm too old for it with snowboarding and some of the tricks that they were doing, but it really is amazing the insanity. I don't even know if I'm going to call it talent and skill, because they're just crazy what they do, but the Japanese kid comes down that half pipe and just, what did he get, like a 94, 95? He looks like he's unbeatable. It was a great run. I'm going to talk in like Olympic lingo here, like I know what I'm talking about. It was a great run. But of course, Shaun White had runs to go. And he, I heard him afterwards, he might have said some of this morning too, that his family gives him trouble because he does this all the time. He kind of rises to the occasion. He had to save the best for last. And he did it. But that was exciting. It wasn't quite as exciting as when NBC shifted to ice dancing in the immediate aftermath of Shaun White's gold medal. I mean, how ridiculous is that? The whole ice dancing thing eludes me. Is that because I'm a guy and I don't appreciate that? Although my wife doesn't like it either, in fairness. It was just a big, big downer when they shifted to ice dancing. But then, of course, it's not even... This happened this morning. So it's not even like 14 hours after he wins the gold medal and all this stuff starts blowing up about the Me Too movement with Shaun White. So there was a suit from a few years ago. I read some of the details of the suit. They're salacious, if you will. I don't know what's true and what's not true. But then he gets himself into a little trouble. So this is the news conference. I think this was the one after he wins the gold last night.
You know, honestly... here to talk about the Olympics, not, you know, gossip. So, I don't think so. I am who I am, and I'm proud of who I am, and my friends, you know, love me and vouch for me, and I think that's stands on its own. So
yeah. So somebody asked him at the news conference about these allegations and the suit from a few years ago. So then he felt, because I guess he was getting criticized because he called it gossip, which gave the impression that he was minimizing whatever allegations might be out there upon him or anyone else. So he goes on the Today Show this morning.
I'm truly sorry that I chose the word gossip. It was a poor choice of words to describe such a sensitive subject in the world today. And, you know, I'm just truly sorry. And I was so overwhelmed with just wanting to talk about how amazing today was and share my experience. Every experience in my life, I feel like it's taught me a lesson. And I definitely feel like I'm a much more changed person than I was when I was younger.
far too polite, far too polite. But again, you have to apologize for absolutely everything. No matter what you do, you have to apologize. That's the new rule in America in 2018. It doesn't really matter if you're guilty of anything, you just have to apologize. It doesn't matter if it was wrong or if you shouldn't apologize, you still have to apologize, right? We've had several examples of that this week alone. But happy Valentine's Day, everybody. Hopefully you're having a good day. And let me see here. There are a couple of the things that I wanted to get to off the top of the show, and I might have to wait on that. So coming up a little bit later, there is this story about Trey Gowdy today, who says, and this is, I think, important because he's been an ally of, certainly of this White House. He's one of the, I guess we'd say, hardcore conservatives up there on Capitol Hill. He's given up his seat, though, after this year. But he made an announcement saying that the House Oversight Committee is looking into the Rob Porter situation. What happened there? Inconsistencies in the timeline and the stories from the White House and from General Kelly.
Who knew what, when, and to what extent? And if you knew it in 2017 and the Bureau briefed him three times, then how in the hell was he still employed?
Will the Oversight Committee be launching an investigation into this?
We did last night.
So it's official.
We are directing inquiries to people that we think have access to information we don't have. I'm going to direct questions to the FBI that I expect them to answer.
All right, so he's a Republican member of Congress that chairs that committee. And he's concerned about the narrative coming out of the White House on Rob Porter. Paul Ryan, the speaker, asked about that today.
He did inform us, and that is his job as the Government Oversight Reform Chairman. They clearly have to have work to do to fix their vetting system. I don't know exactly how they'll do that. I'll leave that to them. But Chairman Gowdy is doing his proper job in oversight. And yes, he did give us
how
a heads up.
How can the White House better get out in front of this?
Well, I'll leave that to them. I can't, obviously, we're the House. I can't answer that question.
All right. So there you go. You got another investigation. I think they're trying to set a record for the number of investigations on Capitol Hill. We're going to talk about the debt, the deficit, and why perhaps it will never be solved this afternoon with David Thornton, who's a contributor to The Resurgent. Also, Josh Krasauer, the politics editor for the National Journal, is going to join me this afternoon as well. And, you know, with Black Panther opening, I wanted to sort of delve into the history of Black Panther. I am not a comic book geek. I like the comic book movies. I never really collected comic books when I was a kid or anything like that, or as an adult. I never wore a pocket protector. I have kissed girls. But I do find this as a cultural phenomenon pretty interesting, and it's tracking, I think I said yesterday, at least $150 million for the weekend, maybe 165. That's a huge, huge opening, especially with an all-black cast sort of busting some of the, you know, the traditional norms in Hollywood. Chris McCauley's going to join me via Skype this afternoon. He's a geek. He's, you know, self-anointed geek, video game and comic book reviewer, and we'll talk about a little of the history of Black Panther. Something else we're doing. By the way, what happened as we're watching Shaun White win the gold last night, his third gold? The Blues collapsing. I turned that game on, and it was 3-0 in the third period. I was flipping back and forth from the Olympics, and I thought, oh, and this is always a mistake. That's safely in hand, and it wasn't. Oh, the other thing last night, it was a great sports night. I forgot to mention Mizzou. Because all of a sudden, they've won 5 in a row. That's a great win against Texas A&M, a really good team. They didn't look very good last night. Mizzou's had those moments as well. They had, I think, Joe Lunardi had A&M projected as a 7 seed in the, you know, snapshot right now. These things change dramatically over the course of the next month. But I think maybe if Mizzou keeps winning and they have a soft end of the SEC schedule coming up here, they could end up with a 7, maybe a 6 or a 7 seed. We'll see. I don't want to get too excited because they were so bad when I saw them 2 weeks ago tonight. On the topic of the Blues, not a good performance last night, but to put you in a little bit of a better mood, we are giving away pairs of tickets to the Blues and the Sharks on February 20th at Scott Trade Center. Each card will come with an autographed Valentine's card from a member of the team, and you're going to be able to win these throughout the afternoon. When you hear, it's pretty obvious. I can't play it for you because then people are going to call and say, am I the winner? But you're going to hear a request for you to call and be a winner, and that could come up at any time.
Stay connected. Stay informed. St. Louis's news, traffic, and weather. KMOX. Depend on it.
All right, again, active shooters still at large at a high school in Parkland, Florida this afternoon. Police and emergency vehicles on the scene. There are reports of 20 people being injured in the shooter still at large. So we're on top of that with the resources of not only CBS this afternoon, but also there's a station in Miami, WFOR, which is broadcasting all of this, nonstop coverage. So if need be, and, you know, it's one of those things. I've been here too many times, ladies and gentlemen, on a show day, whether it's a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday. It doesn't matter. You got a school shooting. I don't know why it always happens right before my show. I guess it's just because of the school day. But it seems to happen a lot, like at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and then we don't find out a whole lot more for a little while. And then, unfortunately, I'm not saying that's what's going to happen here, but unfortunately, we end up discovering that far too many people, well, anybody that dies is far too many people, but I think you get my point. So we'll definitely stay dialed into that this afternoon. Meantime, let's talk about how the Republicans have apparently abandoned all efforts to bring down the debt and deficit. And David Thornton is here with me this afternoon. He's a contributor to The Resurgent. He joins us on KMOX. David, how are you?
I'm doing well, Mark. Thanks for having me.
We've given up, haven't we? Your piece that you wrote was Why Federal Deficit Spending Will Never Be Fixed Ever. That's not too optimistic, but unfortunately, I think I share your sentiment.
Yeah, I can't say that I don't think a lot of Republicans don't want to fix the deficit, but it's the way the system's set up. We're evenly divided, and without some compromise between the two parties, that there's just not much hope for progress, and they very rarely come together on anything except increased spending.
Yeah, so when you say you don't think it's ever going to be solved, you're just coming at this, and I tend to approach things this way too, as a realist, right? I mean, you can hold out hope that maybe someone's going to have an epiphany and say, hey, we need to work together on these things, or my daughter, who's about to be 3 years old, will not have to worry about Social Security or Medicare down the line because the money won't be there.
Yeah, I agree with that. We can always hold out hope for common sense to break out and some compromise and bipartisanship, but I just don't see it happening realistically.
Yeah, so Rand Paul, and I talked about him quite a bit last week, he said the dirty little secret is that, by and large, both parties don't care about the debt. They sometimes, I guess, give the impression that they do care about the debt, but, David, in the end, it's about bringing the pork barrel projects home. And defense spending in particular is interesting to me because I'm a fan of our nation's defense, and it is one of the constitutional responsibilities that the federal government has. But I've never been one to say that defense spending is off the table, when it comes to potential cuts or restraint.
Yeah, I think we all have to be, if we really want to cut the deficit, we all have to be willing to cut our own pet projects. And that's the fundamental problem, is that we're willing to cut the other guy's priorities, but not our own.
When it comes to the, and I think you break this down in the piece, military spending is a lot of money, right? But that's really defense and security. That's 20% of federal outlays. So you can certainly have, I guess, defense spending even increasing like it is, but you're talking about healthcare spending, Social Security. Everybody says, don't touch my entitlements. I paid into this. I think we all get that. We're not trying to take away any kind of benefits that people have. I want my Social Security when it comes due, when I'm able to retire, if I'm able to ever retire. But we're talking about the future generations. I don't know how old you are, but I mentioned, I have kids. We're talking about whether or not that money that we're all paying into the system right now and paying out for our moms and dads and grandparents will be there for the future. And that can keeps getting kicked down the road further and further.
Yeah, it does. I'm 46 years old, and for at least a decade now, I haven't really expected to get anything from Social Security that I'm paying into it. And those trust funds and Social Security are reaching a crisis point, and especially the disability fund. It changes a little bit with different economic conditions, but within about 10 or 15 years, we're going to have to make some hard choices.
But who's going to do that? And I think that's part of your point, right? Who's going to sit back and say, we have to solve some of these problems? Now, it's my understanding that the Republicans are going to move forward and try to do something with entitlement reform. But going back to being a realist, what would you say the chances of any success on that would be?
Oh, again, I'm not optimistic. Paul Ryan is one of the few politicians of either party that has talked realistically about how to get us out of this fix. And, President Bush back in the early 2000s tried to reform Social Security, and there was pretty much a mutiny on both sides of the
That's
aisle
right.
against
yeah.
that idea.
And Paul was involved during that time as well, and it just wasn't, the timing wasn't right for that, I think, is where we came down eventually. But then that was 14 years ago, so nothing has happened ever since. They sort of gave up.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Really, it's the voters on both sides of the aisle that really are not interested in it. We can talk a good game, but like you said, when you start talking about Social Security, then people start saying, that's my money, you can't touch it, and they'll vote against anybody who tries to, almost. There might be a few exceptions out there, but...
Not very many, though. David Thornton, who contributes to the publication, the website is called The Resurgent. I appreciate coming on here. I wish I had more optimism, but I'm kind of along the lines of where you are here in trying to solve some of this.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, Mark. I appreciate it. And thanks for being on our side.
All right. I appreciate it. Thanks, David. 228 at KMOX. Get you updated here on the situation in Florida at a high school in Parkland, Florida, where... there has been evacuations of the classrooms, a lot of police on the scene. It's still described as an active shooter and an active shooting situation. The video that CNN and Fox and other networks have been showing is of students streaming out of the building in rather organized lines with their hands up as police sort of usher them out of the doors and out of the classrooms and into a safe space. And there's still some people that are hovering, some law enforcement people that are hovering outside of the building and, of course, emergency vehicles. But what's happening inside, I think, is the question. Is the shooter still there? Are there students still trapped? We just don't know. We'll get an update from CBS here in just a little bit more than a minute on KMOX.
Eat some Blues and Stars Friday night. Pre-game skate at 7. The puck drops at 7:30. Chris Kerber and Kelly Chase have all the action. Hear it here on your home for the best Blues coverage. KMOX.
Listen for your chance to win Blues tickets twice an hour here on KMOX. I'm pretty sure, I'm not good at math, but I think we might have done it twice already, right? You'll hear the announcement when it's your turn to call. Jump on the phone line. An opportunity for Blues tickets after the collapse last night. We'll talk more about that with Chris Raby down in Jupiter, Florida. Also, Kyle McClellan with his thoughts on spring training at 4:20 this afternoon. Before I get back into some of the things that we're going to do here this afternoon, let me give you a quick update on the shooting. Again, active shooting at a high school in Parkland, Florida, at least 20 injured. Here is an anchor from WFOR-TV sort of updating what's going on down there.
This is a multi-casualty incident, according to law enforcement officials, but we do not know exactly what that means and how many people have been injured in this apparent shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. Again, this is at 5901 Pine Island Road. If you're just joining us, the police have been out there on the scene for at least the past hour. The school was placed on lockdown. The SWAT team has been out there from the Broward Sheriff's Office, Coral Springs Police, and other law enforcement agencies. They've rushed that three-story building that you're looking at right there, and shortly after they went in, we saw students walking out in single file with their hands up and with the heavily armed law enforcement officers escorting them out. Earlier, they had asked students to stay barricaded inside, not to try to make a run for it, and they are telling us, and this is very important, that the person responsible for this shooting remains at large. So that is a major question right now. Who's responsible for the shooting? And that person remains at large right now. We do not know any sort of motive, and we do not know how many victims.
Yeah, so it's a little unclear whether the shooter is still in the high school or if he escaped and ran somewhere else. They're not identifying him, but it's pretty clear from some of the interviews that I've sort of tapped into here during the breaks from fellow students. They know who he is. There was one student who said he spent some time with him at an alternative school and used to try to keep his distance from him. So we're going to find out much more on this with CBS updates throughout the afternoon. The big political story, perhaps, of the day, and there's always big political stories, is what Trey Gowdy has said about the investigation into the whole thing with Rob Porter. He's the chair of the House Oversight Committee, and he announced earlier today that, in fact, yeah, he's gonna look into what happened here.
Who knew what, when, and to what extent? And if you knew it in 2017, and the Bureau briefed him three times, then how in the hell was he still employed?
Will the Oversight Committee be launching an investigation into this?
We did last night.
So it's official.
We are directing inquiries to people that we think have access to information we don't have. I'm going to direct questions to the FBI that I expect them to answer.
It's Trey Gowdy, Josh Krasauer, political editor for the National Journal. That's a pretty big move, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it's pretty notable when you have House Republicans who have normally been pretty loyal to President Trump to really raise some red flags about this White House's endless mishandling of how they dealt with Rob Porter and the ongoing spin and cover-up, frankly, of what happened and when it happened. So, you know, when you have someone like Trey Gowdy, I know is retiring, but you also have some other conservative Republicans who have normally been very loyal to President Trump are starting to raise some questions. That's a big sign.
The year was off to such a good start for this White House. And did they get a little blindsided here? Were they obviously, and I don't know that the president knew anything about this, but obviously General Kelly is sort of in the crosshairs here. And I don't know, has anyone confirmed that he did last week offer to resign?
You know, it sounds like my reporting, what I've heard, isn't that he offered to resign. It's that he would resign if the president asked for a resignation. But look, I mean, culture stems from the top. This White House runs, and the culture of this White House runs from the president's personality and dealing with these types of issues. And he doesn't tell the truth a lot of the time. He makes things up, and he encourages this sort of cover-up, CYA, atmosphere that has dogged this White House throughout the whole Porter scandal. So this is an eight-day story, Mark.
I know.
It's going on for over a week. Crisis communications 101. This usually get all the facts out of the way, accept blame, and this is over in a day or two. But they've made this into a story that's lasted well over a week.
Well, and the problem is the timeline, right? Especially what Christopher Wray said yesterday, when people knew what and how they reacted to that. Because this one even caught me off guard, Josh. I did not think that this was going to be a story that lasted this long. But there's a lot of different components. Not only the ex-wives coming out, writing pieces, doing interviews, the questions about who in the White House knew, but then obviously the testimony yesterday by Christopher Wray, and Republicans sort of aggressively trying to say, yeah, we need to find some answers into these questions.
Well, look, and I think one component of this is sort of understood but isn't really talked about because it's uncomfortable to talk about in the Trump White House. It's really tough for this White House to bring in good talent. It's really hard to find replacements for people who have left this administration. And Rob Porter, you know, despite his horrible record of domestic abuse, was one of the more talented people in the White House. And just like sports teams, you know, they try to overlook sometimes the personal flaws of some of their star players. This White House clearly overlooked this guy's domestic abuse record because he was one of the more talented people professionally in the administration. And when, you know, everything came out there, they were very ill-prepared to deal with the crisis that emerged. So, and this is sort of speaks to a larger problem. Not only is that, the president is tone deaf to issues related to domestic abuse, but number two, you know, it's so hard to bring in good talent in this White House that they try to do whatever they can, even when you have a really flawed person like Rob Porter, even if the guy doesn't have a security clearance, they do whatever they can to protect these folks.
So you think General Kelly survives this?
Well,
because somebody's going to have to take the fall, right?
I don't think his shelf life is going to last that much longer. I don't know. I'd be surprised if he lasts a year. But I do think there's no real obvious replacement. I do think the frustration stems from President Trump himself because he's not getting good headlines, and he blames the chief of staff for that. But, look, I just think there's so many knives out for General Kelly. It's hard to see how you can survive this situation long term.
Well, but if the president wants him to stay, I think that he'll probably stay, although I don't think the media is going to give up on asking the questions, nor really should they. But, you know, you mentioned about an obvious replacement. This sort of surprised me, and I don't know that this would ever happen. But Kevin McCarthy, who's the second in command under Paul Ryan, has been mentioned as a possible replacement as chief of staff. And here's what he said today.
First of all, I have not spoken to the president about anything about a job, and I never have. And there is no job opening.
So where are those rumors coming from?
Well, they're coming from Trump, perhaps himself, a couple of people close to Trump. Look, but look, Kevin McCarthy is the guy who got him Skittles on the plane, right? He's the guy who helped pass his congressional agenda. But Kevin McCarthy isn't a guy who's going to lay down the law as a chief. The key challenge for any chief of staff in this administration is to offer some discipline to a very chaotic atmosphere. And John Kelly has his flaws, but that's one thing he's done, at least until now, fairly well. I don't see someone like Kevin McCarthy, who's an experienced congressional leader, being someone who can impose discipline in this administration. And frankly, a lot of the other names that have been mentioned don't seem like obvious fits as well.
Do you think there's frustration? You know, a lot of times we've seen these stories develop, whether it's the Russian investigation or something else negative about this White House. And then something else comes up. Maybe it's even something on purpose to sort of throw a curveball in the head in the reporters and kind of shift them in a different direction. I'm guessing that did not happen here because there's so many questions about Rob Porter. But I bring it up from this perspective because there was momentum in this White House. The economic news has been very positive outside of what happened on the stock market last week. And you have some legislative victories as well. And people have more money in their paychecks because of the tax cut. And then you had the Nunes memo, which raised a lot of eyebrows and some questions for guys like Trey Gowdy and others. But now this is sort of bogging this White House down. And I don't know if you can, and this is the bottom line when it comes to a lot of these things, can you effectively lead and guide members of Congress effectively through the next set of questions, whether it's infrastructure or immigration reform?
Well, I will take a little bit of a contrarian note on the politics of this, because if you look at the polling, even during the heart of this controversy, Donald Trump's job approval ratings have gone up about 5 points in the last month, even during this scandal. And the Republicans have actually gained some points on the congressional ballot. And I think what you're seeing, and I hear this a lot from a lot of sort of independent-minded voters, they're so sick of all this Trump controversy, they just tune out the cable news. They've already priced that into their perception of this administration. So,
and I think that's even more true on these issues that might be Me Too related, don't you? Because I think there's a little, for better or worse, I'm not defending anyone who's been accused, but there's fatigue that has kicked in. And I'm not just talking about fatigue with men. I think there's women out there, and this happened with Shaun White last night. I don't know the whole story behind whatever happened with him, but, you know, the guy wins a gold medal, and then immediately the headlines this morning are about Me Too again.
Right. When it feels like everyone's involved, I mean, it makes each individual allegation less significant, even though this is a very, very serious issue. I mean, I think what I hear a lot anecdotally is that a lot of the cable news channels, frankly, just cover one story. You know, usually back in the day, you get like, you know, a whole hour's worth of news. You get 10 different stories with full reporting on different stories affecting the country. On CNN or, you know, Fox or MSNBC, you're often just getting, you know, especially on CNN, it's like one story about Trump's scandal, and you're talking about it for 1 hour and arguing with each other, people on both sides, for endless amounts of time. And I think a lot of people who are persuadable are actually turned off by that approach, and they're actually viewing this as very partisan. And, you know, the economy is, frankly, having a bigger weight on their voting decisions than this
right.
scandal.
Absolutely. So let me go back to something you said a couple of minutes ago, because I think this is important. You've written about it. You've tweeted about it. There's a story by Steve Shepard in the Politico this morning about what you just mentioned, that Republicans have erased the Democratic advantage on the so-called generic congressional ballot for the fall. And for the first time since April, as you mentioned, the president's approval rating has equaled the percentage of voters who disapprove of his job performance. That might not sound like a big win. That's kind of a big win for this president. And I wonder if you're hearing how Democrats are reacting to this, because this could obviously, Josh, head in the other direction very quickly for Republicans. But you've got to be, if you're a Democrat and you're assuming that you're going to score a lot of victories in the fall, be a little worried right now.
Well, so Democrats, one of the top Democratic super PACs, put out a memo yesterday with polling and said they're only up by, they said they're in their own polling, they're only up by 4 points on the generic ballot, and that they're not talking enough about health care and the economy. And they said the only way we can guarantee we're going to win back the House and possibly the Senate is by just relentlessly talking about the economy and health care. And any distraction about Trump's personal issues, any talk about his tweets, is counterproductive to the Democrats' political goals. And this is the best-funded Democratic super PAC filled with some of the top Democratic strategists who are putting that out there for the public.
And I think they're right about that, but how do they think that talking about the economy is going to work for them?
Well, they want to focus right now on attacking Trump or focusing on the wealthy and not the middle class. That's their working message.
The class right warfare now. Message.
Healthcare, right. Yes. You know, premiums going up, you know, the tax cut going to the wealthy. It's been a traditional part of their playbook for many, many years. But they've done polling, they've done focus groups, talking about this domestic abuse issue, talking about Russia even, doesn't move the needle in these big districts that they need to win to take back the House.
Josh Krasauer from the National Journal, always great to have you on. Pitchers and catchers reported yesterday. We're psyched about baseball, Josh.
It's, you know, it's 60 degrees here in Washington. We're already looking for spring training.
Yeah, it's 60 here, too. We're having a good weather day. We'll talk soon. Thanks, Josh.
Thanks, Mark.
There is an active shooting situation. Well, we don't know if the shooting is still going on, but the shooter is at large, high school in Parkland, Florida. And at least 20 people, were told from reports, have been injured. No deaths have been reported. The school has been evacuated. I mean, dozens and dozens of emergency vehicles and officers and fire and emergency workers on the scene. We're going to get a CBS update here in about 90 seconds on KMOX.
Get your news now and talk about it tonight at 10 with Ryan Recker on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
All right, we'll keep you posted on the shooting situation in Broward County, Florida, Parkland, Florida. And it's weird because you don't see any victims coming out of the school, and you don't see really emergency people going into the school. Now, we don't know exactly where the shooter is, and that makes things a little bit more complicated. But, man, I just have this terrible feeling that this is going to be one of those real deadly situations, and I hope it doesn't turn out that way. On the topic of high school, I only have a couple of minutes left in this hour, but let me touch on something that, and I run across these stories every day, ladies and gentlemen. You probably do, too. You see them on social media, things that drive you crazy, that you want to pull your hair out, and you say to yourself, is this really happening? A lot of times I have to assess, is this an Onion story, you know, from the satirical publication and website, The Onion, or is it real? And this perhaps is one of those topics. If I were to tell you that there is a movement, and it's actually been something that has taken place in Europe, which is always a bad sign, that is happening in schools here to ban the phrase best friend. Don't say best friend.
The movement isn't a ban on friendship per se. It's just geared toward having children broaden their friendship circles and become more inclusive. And it's a move a lot of educators think goes in the right direction.
There's been a movement in some American schools and European schools to ban the phrase best friend.
My daughter's 13 years old. She has best friends. They change by the day the same way she changes her socks.
That's a great point, by the way, because, well, and some people say best friends when they have multiple best friends. But this sounds like ridiculous insanity. And let's keep in mind, the Europeans don't really bathe that often, so to take their advice in anything might not be the best move.
Rumored to have first started in Prince George's South London school. This push to break up best friends is catching on, says clinical psychologist Dr. Barbara Greenberg.
The idea of banning the phrase best friends is a very intriguing social experiment.
No, and it's not. It's, wait, let me stop you right there. It's stupid to ban a phrase like that. It's not a very intriguing social experiment. It is stupid to even think about something like that.
And while it may be raising some eyebrows,
that's really disheartening.
I mean, I wouldn't have been very happy in elementary school because that's all I had.
Greenberg, who works with children and adolescents, says there's some good rationale behind it.
I see kids come in all week long who are feeling dreadful because they are excluded and because they are either nobody's best friend or because their best friend has moved on.
Okay. All right. So this is where we are with kids. We have to be so sensitive to their feelings that if some kid doesn't have someone they consider the best friend, the other kids cannot use the phrase best friend. We're going to ban them. How are we going to punish the kids that use the phrase best friend? For this to even reach the point that it's being discussed as serious policy and being covered in the news is a sure sign of the apocalypse, I think. There you go. Update on the shooting coming up, second hour of the show as well. Stay in there. Hang in there.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.